At a briefing in Beijing today, World Health Organization officials described the bird flu that's emerged over the past few weeks in China as one of the most lethal of its kind. The H7N9 strain is blamed for the death of more than 20 people, mostly in eastern China. But after a five-day investigation, officials say the source of the virus remains elusive. What have you heard about H7N9? What do you want to know? Give us a call. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now from his office in Boston is NPR science correspondent Richard Knox. Always good to have you with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And in previous cases of bird flu, generally the villains are livestock, chickens.
Yeah, one of the disturbing things about this to people who are, you know, follow the flu is that this virus doesn't make chickens or other birds sick, or at least not very often or not very noticeably. So it's been very hard to track in the environment. And it just kind of popped up when they first found these human cases about a month ago.
And so we believe that the disease goes from birds, livestock, to people, but what about from person to person?
Not so far. There are three clusters of cases in families where more than one family member has gotten sick, and so that might mean that in those cases the virus jumped from person to person, but not necessarily. It just might mean that the same person, I mean, you know, more than one person in the family got exposed to the infected chicken or environmental contamination.
Yet the fear, of course, is these things evolve.
Oh, yes. I think that's really the big fear on the part of the flu experts that I've been talking to. This virus is clearly genetically partially evolved to infect humans. That's why we're seeing these cases. So there has been some genetic change so far, that allows that, but not the genetic changes that would need in order to pass easily from human to human. And it could acquire that, but on the other hand, the H5N1 virus that flu experts have been following for 10 years has not yet learned how to do that, thankfully.
And the scary part is if this new one does, it's particularly lethal.
Yeah, just to put it in a little bit of context, as Keiji Fukuda, who's the WHO's top flu expert and who led this team to China that over the past 5 days has tried to get a ground's-eye view of what's going on there, he notes that this is one of the most lethal flu viruses known. So far, it has killed about 20% of the known cases. We might want to come back to that because there may be others we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the H5N1 virus, that's deadlier. It's killed about 60%, triple that rate, over the last 10 years.
But with such a small sample, do we really have a good idea of its nature?
Yeah, that's one of the big unknowns. There's been at least one case in China involving a 4-year-old boy in Beijing who seemed to have gotten the virus, or they're pretty sure he got the virus, without showing any symptoms. So that suggests that can happen. How often it happens is a total unknown because there's no good, quick antibody test yet to go around testing people who have been close to the known cases. So we don't know how big the iceberg is. We certainly know the tip of the iceberg are these 108 cases who've gotten generally pretty sick so far. But that's, you can't really calculate a death rate till you know the denominator or the whole iceberg.
And as in terms of response to this, yes, you start taking tests. Yes, you start to develop a genetic signature for it. But also a lot of the time people start, well, killing the bird population.
Yeah, well, in fact, that is a known proven way of limiting the spread of a disease that's spread by poultry and livestock is to stamp it out or cull the infected herds. You can't really do too much of that in this case because, as I said, the chickens, the ducks, the poultry pigeons, you know, the pigeons are a poultry item in China, don't get sick. So you can't really tell when a flock is infected. One thing that seems to have been effective, and they said that today in the conference in Beijing, is that closure of the live poultry markets in Shanghai, which is where this first appeared, seems to have slowed the number of cases emerging in that city.
In Shanghai, and we're talking about eastern China then.
Yes, there are two municipalities and five provinces where the cases have come up so far, except for one in Taiwan today. We should come back to that. Shanghai seems to be the epicenter, and the five provinces surrounding Shanghai. That's a really big area. That's
and like a lot of people.
A lot of people, and you know, hundreds of miles spread. So that's not a small area. There have been two reported cases in Beijing, one an 8-year-old girl who got sick and recovered, and the other her neighbor across the street, who's the case I mentioned, who got the virus but didn't get sick.
Yet you mentioned Beijing, a pretty fair distance from Shanghai, and Taiwan?
Yes, just today the Taiwanese reported an imported case, not something that sprang up spontaneously there, but a man, 53-year-old businessman, who traveled back and forth between Taiwan and a city called Suzhou. I'm not sure I pronounce it correctly. It's near Shanghai. And he got sick after he returned from Suzhou around April 12th. So he clearly was infected there and brought it to Taiwan, which shows, not for the first time, that one of the issues with flu is that it can travel very easily in an age of air travel. He's in pretty rocky condition and respiratory failure in an intensive care unit in Taiwan.
And that's one of the things that really does scare people, is getting on a plane with somebody else who's got it, and then, well, the fear is everybody else on the plane gets it, and they take off to all sorts of different points, and at that point it's hard to contain it. The important point to reemphasize, though, so far, no spread of this virus, this strain of the virus, from one person to another person.
That's right. They've been monitoring in China more than 1,000 people, I think, by now, who have been close contacts with the known cases, and they have not been finding spread from the cases to other people, except possibly in these, you know, like three families, and that's iffy. So I think right now we're not gonna see an explosion. It would require something else, some unknown genetic factor that you can bet scientists are looking for what that might be in order to enable the virus to do that.
Well, we'd like to hear what you've heard about this new strain of flu, what questions you have about it. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And we'll start with Dave. And Dave's with us from Eagle in Idaho.
Yes, I was wondering about the local population, if they're building up antibodies that would maybe help protect them, whereas those of us who don't have chickens in the backyard aren't going to build that immunity.
That's a very good question. Actually, it's a couple of points that are worth making there. One is that this one of the things that's disturbing to flu experts about H7N9 is that never before have humans been known to get this virus. So there's presumably no pre-existing immunity out there in the population, unlike with H1N1 that caused a pandemic in 2009, as you remember. That's an H1 virus, and lots of, you know, practically the whole world has some level of protection against H1 viruses, which is why it wasn't as bad as people feared. With this virus, there is that danger. But the problem is we don't yet know how to test widely for antibodies against this virus. That's certainly something they're working on pretty frantically now, so that we would get a sense of whether people out there who've been exposed developed antibodies, and that might be protective. That's going to be a very important question regarding a vaccine, if it's decided down the road that a vaccine it's a good idea to make one, because we need to know what a vaccine would have to do in order to raise those protective antibodies.
Thanks very much for the call.
Can I follow up with
sure.
a question about, wasn't there like 1,000 or 1,500 dead pigs floating down a river? Where was that? Is there any connection?
That was near the river that goes through Shanghai. Yeah, there was a lot of worry about that. The best information I've seen is that there was no connection. They've discovered a pig virus in a lot of those dead pigs, and they haven't, importantly, they have not discovered H7N9 flu virus in either those dead pigs or in livestock that are in slaughterhouses or farms.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call. We're talking with NPR's Richard Knox, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get Mary on the line. Mary calling us from St. Louis.
Hi. I have a question about this. I was wondering if a person or an animal that consumed poultry that was infected with the virus could get the virus.
Yeah, Richard, if they don't know which animals have it and which don't, couldn't they end up in one of those slaughterhouses?
Yes, that's certainly a matter of concern. As I mentioned earlier, they've been testing tens and tens of thousands of poultry around China and have found mysteriously few that are positive for this virus. So it's not at all clear how widespread it is in poultry or where. The Chinese and the World Health Organization are saying that there's no evidence that people who eat poultry are at risk. You know, the usual precautions are certainly important, which is it needs to be cooked well. You don't want to eat chicken that's rare or pink. And that, you know, people who prepare poultry should be, you know, wash their hands, wash the utensils that they use, wash the cutting boards and so on, because an uncooked infected chicken presumably could contaminate environmental surfaces and get to humans.
But again, no reason to believe this has left China or Taiwan.
No, and also if you know, feeding chicken were a big risk factor, we'd certainly have seen a lot more cases than we have.
Nancy, Mary, thanks very much. Let's go next to, this is Lisa, and Lisa's on the line with us from Jonesboro in Arkansas.
Hi there.
Hi.
It's delightful to hear that it's at this point not much of a concern that it's going to come stateside, but if it does, we do have backyard chickens and I have young boys, and I'm just wondering if there are things that can be done to make sure that we are able to protect ourselves and our family and our chickens.
Well, first of all, I think you should stay tuned. we're trying to cover it, and other media organizations are. And so I think you should watch what's happening in China to get some sense of whether it's becoming a bigger problem, A, within China, or B, outside of China. I think there are certainly the surrounding countries, such as Vietnam, are extremely vigilant about exports of poultry from China right now, and I think that's going to be true here. You know, I don't think there's much reason to worry right now about people bringing the H7N9 virus from China to the United States and thereafter passing it to poultry. You know, that doesn't seem to be in the picture. You know, downstream, you know, I think nobody really knows how this might evolve. I can bet that pretty safely that poultry experts in this country at the Department of Agriculture and academic institutions are watching carefully and probably starting to think about developing a poultry vaccine. But I don't know much more about that right now.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sure.
And in the past, Chinese officials have either not been forthcoming in some cases, or in other cases may not have been aware of everything that's going on. Is there more confidence that this is under control in China?
The World Health Organization has said today and frequently over the past month that they're very pleased with the way the Chinese have been conveying information to the World Health Organization and to the academic authorities who are following this. They were very fast in sequencing the virus and publishing the sequence of several of the viruses that they recovered from patients in China, which really enables researchers everywhere to try to puzzle this thing out. They invited this international team of flu experts, including Nancy Cox, who's the chief flu expert at the CDC in Atlanta, into China to look at the situation. I think the indications are that they're really doing everything they can not to do not to be charged of the same thing they were 10 years ago when SARS emerged, and they really did try to cover it up for a critical period of time.
And if the decision is made that a vaccine does need to be developed, we keep hearing about new technology that would make that faster. Is it here in time?
Yes, it is, fortunately. There are ways of so-called reverse engineering where you start with the genes rather than with the virus, and you you make a synthetic virus that can be the basis for a vaccine. Basically, what a vaccine is a particular strain of virus that then you can disable, make non-infectious, inject into people safely, and they will make antibodies to it. The old way of making flu vaccines, which involves growing up the virus in millions and millions of eggs and then extracting the virus from the eggs and disabling it and then injecting it, is still around, and that's the way we get most of our seasonal flu vaccine these days. They're pursuing a vaccine on both fronts. The newfangled so-called cell culture way and the old-fangled egg way, because they want to be ready to make vaccine in a big hurry if they need to.
And what is the next step?
In vaccine production?
No. What's the next step in monitoring the expansion or the spread of this particular strain, the H7N9?
The next step is for China to continue to test widely in animal populations to try to figure out where this is coming from and whether it's regional and whether it's spreading. That's one of them. I think there's another next step, which has begun, is to study this virus really intensively. For instance, one of the things that scientists in several labs around the world are now doing is to infect ferrets, these little weasel-like creatures which respond to flu the way humans do, and see if it spreads easily from ferret to ferret.
Richard, thanks as always.
Anytime.
Richard Knox, science correspondent for NPR News, joined us today from his office in Boston. Tomorrow, states working to sign eligible Americans up for food stamps and what it's like to take SNAP for the first time. Join us for that. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.